Are your information needs being met by the traditional media, the media that you use? Is anything missing? Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, July 18th. You would think with the proliferation of the 24-hour news cycle and access to new forms of media that most of us would be better informed than ever before. But our guest this hour says news deserts have spread up across the country as our most critical information needs are not being met by traditional media. And we will talk about these news deserts and what can be done about them this hour. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Lou Friedland. He is a professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison, director of the Center for Communication and Democracy. His research focuses on media and civic engagement, and he was recently principal investigator of a group of researchers commissioned to testify about the critical information needs of the American public before the Federal Communications Commission. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So what exactly is a news desert?
Well, a news desert is basically an area in a local community, could be a geographic area or it could be an issue area, that isn't getting covered or is getting systematically undercovered. So, for example, in many parts of American communities, we know that there have been serious cutbacks in reporting on the part of both newspapers and television stations. And the parts of community that tend to be covered the least, not surprisingly, are typically those that have less money, those that have minority citizens living in them, and so on. So that's what a news desert is, Joy.
Yeah, and how did you determine that these news deserts are popping up?
Well, I have to say, and I need to be cautious here. The report, the news desert issue, is one small part of a much larger report to the FCC on the critical information needs of local communities. So, the way that I'm going to answer your question, but basically, I need to say what we did.
Mm-hmm.
We looked at the local information needs of Americans in 8 specific areas. And we tried to ask ourselves, what are the basic needs, the most fundamental needs that any individual living in any community in the United States would have? What are the kinds of information that they would need to thrive as individuals? And also, what kinds of information would communities need to thrive? And we looked at a range of areas from health and education to emergency and risk management. And then we tried to ascertain what we knew from existing research about whether those needs were being met. And our conclusion is a little less stark than the news deserts are popping up across America. I need to be clear. Our conclusion was that in these critical areas of information need, that many American communities may be lacking the information that they need, even with the advent of, as you said before, an explosion of information on the Internet.
Mm-hmm. So more research needs to be done.
Well, more research does need to be done. The standard cry of all academics, but nonetheless, in this case, it's true. Basically, the FCC commissioned the report in order to understand what the state of our knowledge was. So this was a report on the state of our knowledge of critical information needs of local communities. And what we discovered is that while there are clear and existing needs, research actually doesn't say that much about whether those needs are being met. Most of the recent research in academia and in communication, for example, focuses primarily on the Internet. And right now, the hot areas, as you might imagine, are social media, Twitter, Facebook. And those when you research those areas, what you're looking at are people who are already information literate, information rich. have relatively high access and high users of these new media, and that's fine. They're very important, innovative areas of our media landscape. But what that kind of research tends to ignore is the fact that most Americans, many Americans, live in communities of place. They live in neighborhoods. They shop locally. Their kids go to school. They pay taxes. They have health care that's local. And those represent a whole range of information needs that people have that the Internet doesn't always provide, and that traditional media aren't providing in the way that they used to.
Yeah, why aren't the traditional media providing more of this local news?
Well, I think there's two answers to that, Joy, and in some ways they're fairly simple. Unfortunately, or fortunately or unfortunately, they're pretty simple. One is that one of the things that we certainly have learned in my research group's work, but also this has been replicated in people's work across the country, is that newspapers are really the beating heart of news in almost all local communities. In some local communities, you have a television station that does independent reporting, but it's almost never at the volume of the local newspaper. And as we've heard many times over the last several years, newspapers are in a crisis in the United States. Their business model is broken, and many of them are entering into what I would call a vicious cycle of cutbacks, which lead to lower reporting, less reporting, fewer reporters on the ground, fewer neighborhoods reported, which means less original news in the paper, which means, among other things, fewer readers. And so that downward spiral of American newspapers ripples throughout the entire local community information ecology. So when you've got the most vibrant source feeding the local news ecology shrinking at a very rapid rate, it affects everyone else.
Yeah. And what are we missing in terms of if perhaps we still have access to our national newscasts and other forms of media? What are we missing out in terms of informational needs if we're not reading local newspapers?
Well, I think there's two questions there. One is, what are we missing when we don't read local newspapers? And the second is, what are we missing even when we do read local mm-hmm. newspapers? But I'll answer the first one first. What we miss when we don't read local newspapers are information about our schools and our school systems. We miss information about local taxation. We miss information about local political offices, about local policies, about road improvements, about the healthcare system, about emergency and risk management systems, and so on. I could go on and on and on. We miss all of that information that forms the day-to-day nitty-gritty of living in a local community in what is a federal republic. And what I mean by that is that we are a nation that is grounded in localism, for better or worse, and some people argue this, but basically we're built from the ground up, from the township up. And the average American municipality has 100 units of government. And again, that can be kind of confusing, but nonetheless, those governments make tax policy, they run our schools, and so on. And so if we don't know anything about them, essentially, we're all going to suffer.
Yeah. And what are we missing in terms of important information needs, even if we do read our local newspaper?
Well, I'll give you an example. It used to be that if people wanted to know about their schools, usually they'd get the school newsletter. Maybe they'd check the school lunches and they'd read the principal's report, the PTO president, or whatever. Well, now, as we've shifted to more and more in America to a system of charter schools and independent schools and choice schools and online schools and cyber schools, and as we in many communities have the shifting shifts of investment, so we have achievement gap crises and so on, Understanding our local school system is getting a lot more complicated. And while newspapers do a pretty good job still of covering the headlines, here in Madison, there's been a debate over the achievement gap. Once that story broke, it was a big story, and it was well discussed in our local press, at least the formal ins and outs of it. But nobody was out there on the ground, really, or certainly not publishing about it, talking to people in the communities that were affected by that achievement gap weeks, months, even years ahead of time. And it certainly wasn't being reported on in any systematic way. So what we have is a new system that covers crises when they break, covers the institutional aspect of those crises, but doesn't get out there on the ground talking to people in neighborhoods on a regular basis in the way that, frankly, newspapers used to do much, much more.
So what's the answer, Professor Friedland?
Well, as they say, if I had it, I'd be rich.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there's one answer. And that's part of why the FCC commissioned this report. We think that part of the answer lies in understanding the shape of the new community communication or community information ecology. And that's kind of a big phrase, and it sounds like a buzzword. But all it really means is that the information needs of communities are all interconnected. They are one large living system. And when you start to get shrinkage at the middle level, by middle level I mean the coverage of neighborhoods, among other things, but also community institutions, then you start to get disconnections in local community. So the question then really is, what kind of a new system might reconnect those middle levels, the institutions in the neighborhoods that aren't being covered in the same way that they used to be by newspapers? And there are a couple answers. One is the way that things are emerging in the city of Seattle, for example, where you've got a newspaper that's actively working with at least 30 independent, what we would call regional, by which within the city, news organization. So, for example, the West Seattle blog covers a section of town. It's not a separate town, West Seattle. It's about 70,000 people with a couple really dedicated reporters, and they burrow down to the street corner level in that city of, or that's rather community neighborhood of 70,000 people, and they produce pretty much all the news that's fit to print in that neighborhood. But the Seattle Times also collaborates with them, so they help feed each other. And what you get then is you get a healthy neighborhood-based reporting, but you also start to get a healthier community-wide reporting, because the issues and problems that bubble up from West Seattle that may be of interest to everybody in Seattle actually have an outlet in the Seattle Times. So that points us to one kind of answer, these kind of robust middle level sources of news. But that will only work if there's a really connected system. And there are reasons why that connected system works in Seattle and some other reasons why it hasn't worked as well in other places.
Well, we'll talk about why it's not working in some other places, perhaps, and other solutions to this news desert phenomenon. We are talking with Lou Friedland. He is a professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison. He's director of the Center for Communication and Democracy. He recently presented research before the Federal Communications Commission. He was working on how our news needs are being met, how our information needs are being met by our news media. How are your information needs being met? 1-800-642-1234. Do you feel like you get enough of the essential information that you need from the media? What, if anything, gets left out? Where do you turn when you need essential information? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And do you follow local news? Do you think you're missing out on important local news? We'll welcome your thoughts about that as well. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Tomorrow at this time, we will talk with author Jennifer Traynor Thompson about the many different ways to make and consume hot sauce. We're going to talk about all things hot sauce tomorrow at this time. Right now, we're talking about our information needs and whether our media sources are meeting our information needs. Our guest says that not everyone does have easy access to information about emergencies and risks, our health and welfare and the environment, the quality of local schools, transportation, economic opportunities, civic and political information. Says that there is a drought of local news. There are news deserts in this country, and we wonder what you think if this is a problem, whether you are being served by your traditional media, what you think you might be missing out on, or what solutions you think there are to this issue. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Lou Friedland, who is a professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison. John on Facebook writes, "This is why community television is so important. Those public access, local educational, and local governmental channels on cable and the internet are the only way many communities ever see hyper-local news and events." What about public access TV, Professor Friedland?
Well, I think John's right. That is one important source of among other things, the raw material of much of our local governance, so that at least people can watch their local school boards or their local city council in action and have a chance to view it online, as well as many other things. That's great. Public access is an important contribution. It's one important peg, but I think the thing that, you know, we all recognize, I'm someone who cares. I think I'm relatively active in my community, and I read a lot of news. But I'm not likely to sit and watch my entire city council meeting for a lot of reasons.
No.
Nor most of us, partly because they're long, and most of us have other things we want to do with our time in the evening. Whether that's good or bad, that's what news does. Good reporting sends a report to the local city council meeting and has that person sit there and digest the most important information that we actually need to know, obviously making some news judgments along the way. And that's the difference between reporting and raw access. A lot of people who, for example, say that the internet is replacing local news, say that there are all these raw sources of news out there now, databases and documents and video, and that provides absolute transparency because we can get deeper into the actual sources of what the news was reporting on only a few years ago. I should say only the news was reporting on a few years ago. And that's true. That's good. It's good to have those sources out there. But we tend to forget that, you know, we human beings live in a time frame of 16 waking hours a day, give or take, and there's a reason that we aren't all reporters, because we don't all have time to sift through everything that may be of interest to us, and that's what news, when it really works well, does. And as the news shrinks, even if there's more raw material out there, we're going to know less and less about the immediate world around us, particularly in our local communities.
What about, Professor Friedland, though, this effort I'm seeing, at least with some internet websites that are available locally, obviously available anywhere, but with a focus on local news. For example, one that comes to mind is Channel 3000. Actually, has neighborhood news where it's like citizen reporters who are posting information about life in their neighborhood or things that they believe are important. Is that an important part of this?
Well, I think it is an important part of it, and I should disclose at this point that I'm the publisher of the Madison Commons, which is another one of those local news websites, and we collaborate with Channel 3000, so you can take whatever I say with a grain of salt, but I would just want to make that clear. I think what Channel 3000 does here in Madison is really important. It does provide a platform for news from different neighborhoods, but I also know that the flow of information into Channel 3000 is like it is for all of these sites across the country. It's not just Channel 3000. It's sporadic. Some areas are covered, others aren't. In some areas, people have more time to sit and write about what's going on in their local community, and others they don't. In some cases, people want to write more about things that are of immediate interest to them, naturally so. You know, what are my kids doing? What's happening with my high school? But that doesn't mean that the questions of taxation or schools or healthcare are necessarily going to be tackled by citizen reporters. And I think that that's another fallacy, not of Channel 3000 at all, but of the whole idea that hyperlocal news is somehow going to replace, or citizen reporting is going to replace, the traditional news system. I think it can be a great supplement. It's almost always a good supplement. It's rarely a bad one. But it really is a supplement or a complement. It's not an alternative system.
Our next caller is Drew in Hudson. Hello, Drew.
Hi. Yeah. Thanks for taking my call. I live in a part of the state where we get basically all Minnesota news. And, you know, we're stuck hearing about the stadium being built for the Minnesota Vikings rather than, you know, what's happening in Wisconsin, like about the recall election or stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a bummer, except you do get some of that Wisconsin news on Wisconsin Public Radio, don't you, Drew?
Yeah, that's the only way. I mean, even we don't get it, there's no daily paper other than the Pioneer Press from St. Paul or the Star Tribune from Minneapolis. So we're kind of stuck, you know, like we are living in Wisconsin, but we get all this Minnesota coverage, and we have no access other than this network to the Wisconsin news.
And we don't provide every single thing you need to know. That's tough for someone who lives in a media market, covered by another state, Professor Friedland.
Yeah, and of course that's a kind of a classic situation where you've got a metro area that extends across two states, and one of them is large and dominant. So this has been with us for a long time. But nonetheless, first of all, I want to offer my sympathy that you have to listen to Vikings news, period. But beyond that, I think that the issue here is that there was a time when, that area of the state was always dominated by Minnesota news, probably always will be. But there was more of a local news ecology. There was the possibility of some local community papers, local community reporting. I don't want to sugarcoat it. It wasn't as if it was necessarily all that much or all that rich, but there was something there. I think that there still can be things there. There are examples, and Joy, you asked about hyperlocal reporting a few minutes ago. There's an organization in Deerfield, New Hampshire, the Forum, that actually it was five towns in Deerfield who also lived in the shadow of Boston, of course, in New Hampshire. And they got together and they said, we've got a local shopper that's not really providing us news. And citizens got together and basically started their own online news organization that's now been going for, I think, at least 6 years. So the web does offer us ways to create alternatives, lower cost alternatives, where they didn't exist before. And I want to be careful to note that the web provides us with a lot of new avenues for providing news. But nonetheless, the people at the forum, they're citizens who volunteer their time. You know, every hour that you spend helping to create a community volunteer news organization means one that you're not spending at your kid's, baseball game or something else. An hour here has to come from someplace. And the money for that project has to be raised again in that local community, just like it does for any other large volunteer project. So it's a lot of work. Yeah. It's hard to do.
Drew, thank you very much for the call. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Lou Friedland, who is a professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison. He was also recently the principal investigator of a group of researchers commissioned to testify about the critical information needs of the American public before the Federal Communications Commission. And conclusion is that not all of us are having our critical information needs met by the traditional media. And we're talking about why that is and what can be done about it, why it matters. Paul in Wapaka is our next caller. Hello, Paul.
Good morning.
Morning.
And how are you this morning?
Pretty good. Are you getting your information needs met?
Well, the reason I'm on the telephone is because I'm 79 years old, and so I've seen a lot of changes in the media. It used to be we'd get in-depth news, you know, even if somebody ran for office, we got a lot of background information, got a lot of information. And also in all the media that we had, we used to get in-depth information about most everything that was of consequence or important. A lot of people my age aren't really involved in web pages or Facebook or computers, and getting in-depth information is kind of really helpful. And right now, my feeling is that all the medias are getting to be competitive in sensationalism and trying to draw in the biggest bucks they can for advertising. In my opinion, the newspapers are going downhill because of this, and they're having some issues. But we're not reading. I'm not a member of the Moravian Church, but I get that newspaper, which gives me pretty in-depth information worldwide. Nothing concentrating just on the United States, but they do a lot of really good reporting, but it's the only media I've found that is of interest because of the way it's written.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, what was this newspaper?
It's a tabloid that comes out from the Christian Science Monitor.
Okay, the Christian Science Monitor, okay.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Paul. He brings up a number of points. I guess first was that as a 79-year-old, he says he doesn't really, you know, he's not online all the time looking for stuff. So what about people like Paul?
Well, I think that's a very good point. Actually, Paul made at least three good points that I can think of off the top of my head. One is that one, that essentially everyone's not online all the time, and everyone doesn't have the same level of access. Everyone doesn't have a laptop that's has wireless access or has broadband, or even if they do, they don't necessarily have it in their homes. That differs by age. Some older people have less access, but it also differs by income. You know, lower income people don't have that access. And so we can't just assume that everyone's going to be sitting online cruising the world for their news all day long like, you know, younger people, professional people, people in the cities do. That's a really important point.
Mm-hmm. And he also was mentioning, and I wanted to follow up too, on the he doesn't see as much in-depth reporting going on anymore, and specifically when it comes to politics. He thinks it's, you know, it's all sensationalism and maybe things that are not all that important, which is what he's apparently seeing on TV.
Well, I guess the one thing I would say about that is one thing we do know is that whether there's more or less sensationalism, and that's been debated, there certainly is less coverage of local politics. There was one study done, really systematic study, that monitored hundreds of hours of television in the Los Angeles area and found that that basically less than 30 seconds was, on average, was devoted to local community politics and local community affairs, and that's even including elections. And obviously, if you live in, you know, a certain ward or a certain part of the city and you want to vote for your alderperson or your city council representative, that's not going to be on TV. And increasingly, unfortunately, that's not in the newspapers either. Occasionally, you'll have a spread of, you know, 3 days before the election or, you know, that says here's the aldermanic candidates and here's a paragraph on what they stand for. But it used to be that there was actually some regular coverage of that level of politics. And that's shrinking. There's no question that that's shrinking in the newspapers. And the thing is, as I said before, when it shrinks in the newspapers, it shrinks online. Some studies have shown that about 85% or more of local news that shows up online is actually originally sourced of the local newspaper. So when the newspaper dries up, everything starts to dry up.
He also talked about, he does have one source that he likes to read, the Christian Science Monitor, and I think he was also happy to read about international coverage. What about international coverage? Isn't that as important as local coverage?
Well, sure it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, no American or any no one with their eyes open would say that in a global world where we're still fighting a war and have a global economy that international news isn't critical. So we're certainly not saying that. And in fact, I think it's important to acknowledge that that's the one area where probably there's been a huge expansion of choice in news reading with the rise of the Internet, where, of course, you now can read The Guardian online from England, or you can, depending on your language ability, you can read from basically all over the world. And that's great. That's a huge expansion of choice for national news and international news. But again, the problem is that many scholars who concentrate on this ignore the fact that a lot of our decision making in the United States is at the state level. Our school budgets, in many ways, are partly set by the state. Our taxation is set by the state and then carried out by local municipalities. If you care about how your kids are educated, you really do care about the state budget, whether you know it or not. And that news has been shrinking radically in the past 10 to 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything else our caller mentioned that you wanted to follow up on?
No, I think that pretty much covers it.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should talk a little bit about how Wisconsin Public Radio might be able to help fill in some of these voids when it comes to especially state coverage. And local coverage. As we talk with Lou Friedland, he is professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison. We are talking about our information needs and whether our information needs are being met by our media sources. Are yours? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. What, if anything, gets left out? What are you missing from your media consumption? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn is with you. Kathleen and her guest will talk about the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, a Paris-based think tank, and how it conducted its first review of a U.S. regional urban center this year, taking on the Chicago tri-state region. And they're going to be talking about Southeast Wisconsin and its role in the greater Chicago megacity. That's coming up. We are talking about our news needs and whether our media sources are serving our news needs. Talking with Lou Friedland, professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison. Our next caller is Ann in Milwaukee. Hi, Ann. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. The reason I was calling is it seems to me that over time, the function of news reporters has been to essentially, I don't know if it's John Nichols or McChesney who said this, interview both the sheriff and the thief as they were getting away. And there seems to be no real emphasis on getting at the truth and challenging statements that the people who are interviewed make. And I'm wondering, have journalism schools changed in their focus in terms of what the role of the reporter is?
Mm-hmm. Professor Friedland?
Well, that's a good and a big question. Mm-hmm. But I guess the short answer is yes, journalism schools have certainly changed in understanding what the role of the reporter is, and we have debates about how truth is evolving in the changed public sphere and how it's in the era of The Daily Show, Rachel Maddow and Fox News, how exactly we understand the idea of truth at a deeper level and how to report it. So, yeah, the short answer is that journalism schools are at least wrestling with those problems like everyone else is. I don't think that there are any simple answers to it. I mean, I think one of the, you know, one of the issues is that in the new Internet-saturated public sphere, there are going to be many, many points of view circulating around. And, of course, as we've started to understand, everyone can now start to pick their own brand of news. So if you are critical of the, you know, administration, you can live in a world of Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck online. Likewise, if you are critical from the other side, you can watch Rachel Maddow and read Alternet online and so on. So there are these new worlds emerging where people can live within their own sets of opinions, but the harder question is, how do you get to the underlying truths, not just the underlying facts, but the larger sort of questions that underlie those issues? And it's not easy to do when you're doing news for a general public. I guess I could say a lot more about this, but I guess I'll stop.
No, well, I'm follow up just a little bit because there is an effort, certainly, and there always has been, I think, to being, you know, presenting all sides of a various problem or issue or argument on, you know, in a news story. And you see a network like CNN, that's one you didn't bring up, that's the one that, you know, supposedly tries to present all sides more straight journalistically than advocacy journalism. And its ratings apparently are going through the tank, and that people don't want to watch Fair and Balanced for real. They want to see they want to see the opinions. They want to see, you know, it sexed up a little bit. And I'm wondering how that plays into all of this. If people aren't watching, what needs are being met?
Well, I mean, it certainly does play into it. I mean, the thing about CNN is, they are trending down. They aren't quite falling through the floor, but they trend down while MSNBC and Fox are trending up. But the other thing that happens is that when there's actual breaking news or when there's a larger public issue or a larger public discussion, often CNN's ratings tend to climb again as people start to say, well, I've heard these different opinions, but I actually want to see what I think is a fairer, more balanced, no pun intended, representation of what's actually going on in the world and not just hear commentators talk about it. But I do think that it's a world in which people compete. The competition for viewers, time and attention is much more savage than it's ever been. And to put it bluntly, people like to hear their own opinions reflected back to them. It's very hard to do news that's in greater depth, that actually has deeper judgments, that's founded on more complex opinions. There is a problem. I mean, essentially, when you do news that's about the school board, mm-hmm. we've been talking about local news for most of the mm-hmm. most of the hour here. I think that there needs to be news about the local school board and more broadly about the local school system, but I'm not naive in thinking that that's what most people are going to be glued to most of the time during their day. The problem is if that news isn't there at all, if there's no news about your local school board or no news about the local emerging achievement gap, then community problems and eventually statewide problems and eventually national problems just bubble up before we've actually even had a chance to know that they even exist.
Let's go next to Earl in Medford. Hello, Earl.
Oh, good morning.
Morning.
I had a question for the professor about job opportunities in journalism these days. When I graduated from Marquette Journalism School quite a while ago, send out maybe 5 resumes and get 2 offers or something. Are there opportunities, and are we getting the best people possible into journalism programs?
Wow, that's a great question. I actually met with a former student of mine who'd been in Vietnam and China, and he'd been reporting out in a small town in the Mojave Desert, mm-hmm. California. I had a coffee with him yesterday. He just came back to Madison and had that very same discussion. And the short answer is no, there aren't as many job opportunities as there were 5 or 10 years ago, certainly. for good paying full-time jobs in good regular journalism institutions. Those are declining.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a whole lot to say about that, but the long and the short of it is that I think we need to actually bridge the gap between where we are now and what I hope will be a not-too-distant future, where we do have some new form of thriving news institutions so that we don't lose an entire generation of good young journalists.
Yeah. Well, give us an idea of what you'd like the FCC to do now with the information you presented to it.
Well, I mean, we basically, I need to be really clear. What the FCC asked us to review the state of knowledge on where and what the local information needs of communities are and whether they're being met. And what we found is that even looking at literatures in all the social sciences and urban studies and geography and health and education, that there really isn't a lot out there. There's a surprising lack of good scholarship. What we're talking about doing now is moving ahead with some case studies of cities to really explore places like Seattle, for example, to understand why things are working so well there, and to explore even bigger, more complex cities like Los Angeles to understand, for example, how the vast ethnic mosaic of a city like Los Angeles affects its community information needs. And so the next step for us is really to do these sort of national comparative studies and try to develop a bigger, more accurate and grounded picture of what's going on.
We have an email from Leanne in Dunn County who says, I work for two local weekly newspapers. We regularly cover candidates for city council, village and town boards, countywide elected officials such as Register of Deeds, and school boards. I guess she's saying this kind of information is still out there, Professor Friedland.
Sure, and that's great. I mean, I think that the community weeklies, and sometimes they publish weekly, sometimes three times a week. Oftentimes they are one of the last places where that information is available in depth, and I applaud her for doing it and her paper for doing it. We're not trying to say that information doesn't exist anywhere. What we're saying is that it doesn't exist to the degree that it used to exist, and it doesn't exist in our mainstream news institutions the way it used to exist. So that while the Community Weekly is a really important news institution, and we really would have even greater news deserts without many of them, that doesn't necessarily substitute for that Metro Daily running that information in the larger cities.
Mm-hmm. By the way, this Friday night, or I shouldn't say this Friday night, it's Friday night, August the 10th, the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio is going to have live coverage of the U.S. Senate primary debate between all four Republican candidates. If you would like to be an audience member for this event, on Friday night, August the 10th at 8 o'clock in our Madison studios, please call 1-800-253-1158. That's 1-800-253-1158. To participate as a member of our Madison studio audience during this U.S. Senate Republican primary candidate debate on Friday night, August the 10th. At 8 o'clock here on the Ideas Network. Opportune time for me to promote that that event and talk a little bit about, we talked a lot about, you know, television and newspapers, and I'm not trying to be self-serving in the least, but can Wisconsin Public Radio serve a role feeding or providing information for the news deserts?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that Wisconsin Public Radio can, and public media across the country. I think there's a huge opportunity right now for public media all around the country, and WPR is a great example of that. It's a wonderful, and I'm not just saying that because I'm on the air right now. It's an institution that's really essential to the people of the state of Wisconsin. We need more coverage of what's going on at the state level, not less. We have some new outlets like Wisconsin Eye that have emerged in the past few years to give us more of a nitty-gritty of what's going on in the legislature, but we still need good reporters working the state house and working the issues of the state systematically and reporting on them. And I think that we all know that, you know, public radio, public television, like every other news organization, is facing budget crunches and, in some cases, crises. And I think that there's always a temptation to cut back a little bit on news because it's one of the more expensive things to do, and it has sometimes less of a direct return. And I think that it's important for public media, just like other media, maybe more important, to realize that they're providing the essential service in some cases to the people of the state. It, in some cases, WPR and Wisconsin Public Television may be one of the few places that people get regular statewide news now, and so it's even more important in this era of shrinking reporting.
Our next caller is Daryl in Bloomington. Hello, Daryl.
Hello. Well, I'll tell you, there's a whole lot of things that broadcasting can do that the Internet can't do, and they need to be assisting the Internet in finding new ideas, new high utility value ideas that can help reboot the economy and will work with the energy efficiency, energy conservation, renewable energy, and so forth. But you take these forward visionary ideas and you broadcast them in every venue that you can, and you get the people involved, and then instead of just reactive citizenry, you have proactive citizenry that feeds these ideas that will reboot the global economy and help everybody and take care of climate change and global warming and the whole works, because it all works together.
Yeah.
But unless you have effective mass communication on a global basis and a local basis, it's not going to happen, and we're going to be in heap big trouble.
Well, what do you think of that, Professor Friedland?
I think that's right. I think that, you know, the majority of people in the United States still get their news from local television. Television is a primary source for many people. Now, I will say, and having been a television news person myself in a much earlier part of my career, television doesn't do the kind of in-depth coverage that print does, and frankly, rarely has. Occasionally, it's risen to it. But it still is the medium that that gets the word out to the greatest number of people. So I think that that's a really important thing to remember, that the Internet can do many things. It can provide us with many micro bits of all sorts of information, but it can't necessarily reach a large audience, reach a large public, and help set a public agenda. And television and radio as broadcast media still do that. And I think that that brings us to the larger point that was made, that all these media have to work together and have to be leveraged to provide a good, you know, information ecosystem that'll feed a democratic republic.
And we have just a minute to go. Are you optimistic that we can take care of our critical information needs in the future?
I'm not sure I would say I'm optimistic. Mm-hmm. I would say that I think that we have a lot of tools and a lot of modes that we can use, but I think that, like with many other areas of public policy, we don't always leverage them in the best way that we can. I'll give you one quick example. Seattle, one reason that Seattle is so rich is because the city government over many years had this community-based granting program where they built up these community centers where people had internet access in every community in Seattle very early on, so that basically it was a much more democratic discussion. So when it came time for the Internet to take a larger role, many more people were prepared. Well, that's a good example in which public policy, smart public policy, not spending a lot of money, but basically just leveraging public investment could actually make a big difference, not just in people's immediate lives, but in the overall news ecology of that city, and help lay a foundation for the richer environment that they have today.
Well, we'll leave it there for now. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Lou Friedland, Professor of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. Thanks to Naya Mukherjee for producing this hour and to Bill Martins for on-air direction. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.